One, hold the paper up. One, two, three.
You are listening to a free version of the Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder, where every day's casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Friday, January 3rd, 2014. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the award-winning Majority Report. We are still broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District. It's 2014, people. Happy New Year. A little bit belated. It is also Casual Friday. I hope everyone is well rested. I know that I am not. We trudged through the snow and the ice to get here live to usher in the new year, and we will do so with, of course, it's Casual Friday. Cliff Schechter will be here to, well, I guess not so much to wrap up the week. It's been sort of a slow news week, more or less. But also to look forward to 2014. Also joining us on the program today, ostensibly to give me a movie recommendation. You'll recall the last time he was on this program, he made a promise, not just to me, but frankly to all of you. That was that I would be featured in his television program, Marin. Mark Marin will be here to explain why he hasn't responded to my texts or calls since issuing that promise. Also on the program today, the New York Times. Have we reached a tipping point? Calls for some type of limited clemency for Edward Snowden. Meanwhile, Obamacare, we're in full effect now, more or less, which I think is something that we're going to be saying over and over again. Sadly, over a million, almost 1.3 million Americans now have lost their unemployment insurance, long-term unemployed people. Well, the good news, of course, is that Joe Lieberman has a new job working for some type of, what is it? It's not a hedge fund, right? It's some type of VC.
Securities group. Happy New Year,
surprise, everyone. Surprise. Yes, Happy New Year. Oh, you're saying Happy New Year, not just for Joe Lieberman. That was a way...
Happy New Year, suckers.
We've got a couple other interesting stories. Rick Scott finally gets his comeuppance down in Florida. Well, he hasn't gotten his full comeuppance, but it's coming. Partial comeuppance. All that and more on the program. Not much else to say in terms of housekeeping. If you have guests, suggestions for us in 2014, by all means, email us at majorityreporters@gmail.com. And remember, we're always a couple of days, maybe a week or two behind on the emails, because that's just the way that we roll, ladies and gentlemen. But we do ultimately get to your emails. So you can email us at majorityreporters@gmail.com. Don't forget there's all different ways that you can support this program. We definitely need your help in 2014. We were just talking before the break. I mean, before I guess we started, that there's just a sense that, much of my sense of what's going on in the country comes from a limited subset of people. I mean, basically members of this program. And But I just get a sense that the reports of how the economy is booming or is primed to go boom. I mean, have you seen that? I mean, have you seen Michael? You mean you're the, I've seen there.
No. I'm reflecting your skepticism about that claim. I've seen those articles. I don't know where what kind of thin cloth they're being
made
out of. There's
just this sense that we're primed for some type of boom and. Frankly, I'm not, you know, and again, it's a limited data set, but I don't see it. I think people are having a tough time out there. And so, you know, again, we have a policy here that we will not turn anyone away from having access to the full show because of finances. So email us at majorityreporters@gmail.com if that's your situation.
I don't know. I hear the markets are way, way up. I think that's our subscriber base, right? Wall Street types.
Well, yes. We
investors.
That's right. A lot of hedge funders and
penny stock people.
Penny stock people, day traders. And then, of course, IT people. All right, folks. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll be talking to Cliff Schechter. We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report 2014 style. You'll notice that the music has not changed. Well, at least that has not changed for 3 years. But we're still rolling 2010 style, I think, or 2011 style. But we are, yeah, and in some respects, the rest of the music is 1990s. But we have one thing that we're going to keep from 2013, 2012, and 2011 with a tremendous amount of pride and rejoicement, if that's a word. And I'm talking about Cliff Schechter and, of course, the Cliff Schechter theme song.
Cliff Schechter, Libertas LLC, New Media, Public Relations, and Strategy. You want any of these services, you know who you gotta see. Cliff Schechter, Libertas LLC.
We, sorry, folks. Ladies and gentlemen,
what did I miss?
Schechter. Well, I'll tell you what you missed. Michael's got bed bugs. And so now I don't want, I want any equipment that he touches. I want him to put in a sealed plastic bag because I just went through a complete delousing or delousement because the kids had lice. I got
to
deal with bed bugs.
Typical Jew lie from Jew Sam Seder.
What? Why is that? Wow.
I don't have bed bugs.
Michael Brooks going immediately to the anti-Semitic comments. Cliff, how are you? Happy New Year. Happy New Year.
In a way, I like it.
What's that?
And I said he said they're typical Jew lies. Is that what he said?
Yeah, I don't know what's going on.
How very Rand Paul. I mean, but I have to say, it really isn't nice of you, Sam. I mean, you know, Mike can hook up with whatever kinds of women he wants without you mocking them like that. I don't think you should call them names like that, bed bugs and whatever, you know? It's disrespectful.
I understand.
Well, that one completely fell flat, so that's a good start to the year.
I can't wait till we have to issue our set of apologies.
Crash and burn.
This is the 2013. Fortunately, 2013 was the year of apology, right? 2014's not.
2014 is when I just laugh at myself for a joke.
How was your holiday, Cliff?
It was very nice. You know, for the most part, good stuff, relaxing. I mean, there's kids running around, Sam, and they have thoughts, and they have a belief system about what they should be able to do and not be able to do. It usually involves not much sleep and eating lots of sugar and, you know, that kind of stuff. So it could be a little bit tough.
Yes, I'm with you. We took the last five nights of vacation basically to try and wean Saul off of his 2:30 a.m. feeding, which means that I was basically up with him for about an hour and a half every night, just trying to explain to him that mommy was not coming in. Of course, he didn't understand what I said, but he was pissed. There is nothing less you want to see at 2:30 in the morning when you're a 10-month-old baby than your dad. You want your mom, and
you simply don't have the equipment to impress at that point.
No, so I had to basically just sleep on the floor next to his crib as a way of indicating this is what we do at this time. And I think he's getting the message slowly, or he's just trying to torture me. I'm not sure.
It could be a combo.
Yeah, I think it's possible. But here's to 2014 being more about sleep. And let's talk about what else in 2014? I mean, there's no the big stories, I think, over the past week or two, for me anyways, seem to be the worm turning a little bit about Snowden, not just amongst the New York Times, but you're starting to see this more even with the sort of the center left establishment on some level. We had unemployment insurance ending, and no one in Washington seeming to be able to do anything about it or having the will to do anything about it. And the, of course, the ongoing saga of Obamacare, the decriminalization, the legalization, I should say, of marijuana, at least in Colorado as of now, and the Democrats seem to be indicating that they're going to use the minimum wage, or they're going to fight for the minimum wage, in part because that's their agenda, in part because they know that's going to be a cudgel in 2014. Where do you want to start?
I don't know, man. That is quite a list you have there. I like the minimum wage as a place to start because you and I had that conversation, I think, last time I was on, or certainly one of the last times I was on, where we were discussing, you know, the way that often those in the corporate wing of the Democratic Party like to pretend that populism doesn't work, those third way geniuses. And of course it does, and polls will show you these types of issues all poll very highly with people, particularly in the current situation we're in, where unemployment is high and unemployment extensions disappear and wages have stagnated and the whole rest of what's going on out there. And the minimum wage, I think, is something everybody can grasp. I just saw a poll the other day. I think it was at 80% overall supported raises in the minimum wage. That includes 62% of Republicans, 75% of Southern white males. I don't know how the Republicans are below where Southern white males are, considering they're actually one and the same. You'd think that would be the same, but who knows? Maybe they're being dragged down by some other group. And so, I mean, but in any case, it's huge. It's overwhelmingly popular. it does well everywhere. And other people, we talked about Allison Leonard and Grimes in running against McConnell on that in Kentucky and pointing out how he became a millionaire while in office and how while voting against the minimum wage however many times. And it was sort of like, you know, what is it, what will it take to get the rest of you guys to grasp this?
Yeah, well, I mean, it appears, and, you know, I can't seem to find the story in front of me right now, but it appears that at the very least, the this seems to be a strategy that the Democrats are going to pursue, both on a federal they're going to push for an increase in the federally mandated minimum wage. And they're going to start trying to put ballot measures on in states with tight races because this is a winner for them. I mean,
that's the other thing, Sam, that has driven me literally insane, which is, you know, you watch what Karl Rove did with the gay marriage stuff in 2004. And I shouldn't just say Karl Rove always gets all the credit. I'm sure there's a nice sort of group of lunatics all who together came up with hurting people for electoral gain. That year and putting those on the ballot. And, you know, wouldn't turnabout be wonderful fair play here now that the worm has turned on that particular issue? But it's sort of like, you know, pot, legalized pot, gay marriage, you know, background checks on guns. I mean, there are a lot of things that if you were to put on the ballots in a number of states will turn people out. You know, and it's, you know, some, I mean, obviously the federal government has to do most of it, but some measures related to immigration reform, you know, student loans, how about that?
Right.
You know, forgiveness for certain loans or some sort of, I mean, these are all things that pull in like the 80% range. You know, campaign finance reform, another one. You know, public matching funds like what New York City has and Maine has and whatever. And, you know, these are all things that, you know, so why you just wonder what it, the hell's taken so long to begin with. And now we're finally seeing it. I mean, Washington State, it looks like, who has you know, had gay marriage and pot on the ballot. Looks like this time they're going to have background checks on the ballot. You know, obviously, you know, I follow that issue. I mean, right. That's a perfect example. But, you know, as you're pointing out, there are also a number of states that are not talking about the minimum wage. I mean, New Jersey had it on there last time, and obviously Chris Christie still won. So it doesn't solve everything, although he was uniquely popular for reasons that people uniquely misunderstood what an asshole he is. And maybe some of those people that have waited in long lines to get on the George Washington Bridge have a better understanding now. Often, obviously, this is going to turn out a base of people that might not otherwise turn out. It's just common sense.
I don't recall, I mean, maybe you do, but I certainly don't recall over the past 15 years, the Democrats having coalescing around one item like they're talking about doing in regards to the minimum wage to bring out voters in an off election. I mean, if it's happened, I don't recall what it is.
No, I mean, that's the thing. I really don't either. We just don't, you know, the left still, you know, often, way too often suffers from thinking, you know, we've got better ideas that are more popular and let's just have our politicians run on them and we'll win, and sort of forget all the other sort of things going on that you know, sometimes can either change the you know, I don't want to say undermine democracy, certainly putting on referenda doesn't do that, but
right. But
you know, we think, you know, just I'm going to say I'm for these things are popular, these things are right, and I'll win. And it's, you know, and I mean, that's obviously an oversimplification. It's not to say all Democrats run that way. Certainly some have learned their lesson. Some run better races than others. But it's been a big problem. And in states, there's literally, out of all the states where there are swing Senate races, one of those four or five things we just mentioned should be a referendum on every single one of those states. Not to mention states that have a number of swing seats, congressional seats, like Michigan or Pennsylvania, or places where you actually literally could win a couple seats, you know, even though they've gerrymandered them, they're still potentially winnable. You know, but it looks, again, you know, it looks like they're doing it. It looks like they're getting it. I don't know why it always seems to take so long, but it looks like some people are getting behind some of these measures. There may be on the 2014 ballot here in Ohio a freedom to marry initiative that would undo the ban on gay marriage passed here in 2004.
Interesting.
So that would be a good thing, and that would likely make life somewhat tougher for our Governor John Kasich, who just got a Tea Partier primarying him. You know?
Oh, really?
And so Yeah, that's good.
And I would also imagine the what you know is now clear, the sort of the unmitigated success of the auto bailout is also having some resonance in Ohio. Is it, or is that, have we passed that?
I still think it is, because the problem is there's been we've had a further downturn in the economy here. We were doing better for a while, and I think that was largely due to that bailout, which is easily, still again, the GM, what President Obama did with the automotive industry was one of the best, was the kind of government action, bold government action I wish we had seen in a lot of other things,
right?
Because it was the right policy and the right politics all wrapped up into one. But it's slowed down here, and for a variety of reasons. Some of that, Kasich has tried to privatize everything under the sun, and all these things are filled with scandal, and they're not creating jobs. Because, it's a shocker when you privatize things, and then the guys who they're privatized to, like your liquor board and other things, just choose to pocket the profits and not create more jobs. Right? That never happens.
What? No. Why would they do that?
I know.
Let me ask you this. I don't want to make too much of it, but you were a native New Yorker before you went out to the hinterlands.
The hinterlands, as you know it.
De Blasio was sworn in. There's been a lot made of aside from sort of finding some type of some measure of enjoyment in watching Michael Bloomberg sit there and just have to have his legacy tarnished right in front of his face. It's like a roast, except for people aren't kidding. And you don't get a chance to come up and say anything about the roasters.
Yeah, Letitia James got up there and, whoo.
Yeah, and good. And I think it also shows, there was a couple things that had occurred to me. One is, it shows that at the very least, and I'm, skepticism is warranted here as almost sort of de facto skepticism, I think, or pro forma skepticism, rather, is warranted. But de Blasio still is adhering to a very strong populist message. So at the very least, there's a sense that this rhetoric is selling. Obviously, the Clintons, it's not surprising that they're going to be there for any mayor who's sworn in, but they certainly, didn't distance themselves from that. And that's relevant, maybe as you start to look for what the rhetoric will be a couple of years from now. You also saw, I think, there's a tremendous amount of anger. Like, I think there was more anger towards Bloomberg expressed at that inauguration than I would have imagined. And so this is...
Yeah, me too. The
sentiment is
real. The New York Times.
Yeah.
That you may have seen there. I didn't see the inauguration and what exactly was said to know if I think it was too harsh or not harsh or, people get up and they criticize. I don't see anything inherently wrong with that. So I don't know. I'd have to see if I thought the New York Times was saying that. To me, if you spend all your time ripping into the people before you, then yeah, that's a problem. But if you get up and you give your positive vision and part of that is ripping into the people before you, that seems pretty legitimate to me.
Yeah, I have no problem ripping. I'd like to see more of it. I'd like to see, frankly, I would not. I would like to see more of it on a federal level, too. Let's start talking about specific policies and the people who implement them and the implications of those policies, because the other
and
stuff
also just the reality of those policies and sort of take apart their narrative and their BS framing for what it really stands for. Jesus wouldn't have done this. Try reading the Bible when you're cutting people, when you're cutting taxes to rich people and cutting food stamps. It doesn't help the economy because it takes money out of people's pockets. That is a fact. So what is it you're saying? You just want to hurt people. Just come out and say it, right? You're sick people that want to hurt people, and you realize there are other people out there hurting, that if you can divert their attention and sort of appeal to that lizard part of their brain, that maybe it'll help you politically, because that's all you're doing. Because
yeah,
if you really cared
that...
at all about cutting spending, you might touch that thing called the Defense Department. Shut up.
I don't think it's about they want to hurt people. I think they just don't care. They're just, you know, the you know, when you talk about 1.3 million people who have now lost their unemployment, and particularly, I mean, you know, we're now, I guess we're talking on a federal level now, but when you're talking about the extension to unemployment expiring, you're talking about people who are whose lives are just going to be have gone from difficult and hard to just horrible, and you're really think about the amount of time that has been spent on the hundreds of thousands, maybe, of people who are dealing with the hassle of having their crappy insurance canceled and having to buy new insurance. Think about how this was a national catastrophe versus the 1.3 million people who have been unable to find jobs. There's 3 unemployed people for every job opening. That's an average. In some areas, it's 8 to 1. Right. They're losing their long-term unemployment.
Right, they're not just sitting around. The jobs aren't there.
Exactly.
But I got to say, I mean, where I slightly disagree with you, Sam, is I think for some of these guys, yeah, it's just a political game, and it's how they get elected, and they just don't care. But no, I really do think there are some of the other ones that really believe this crap, because, you know, it's the cognitive dissonance, the ability of the human mind, and particularly in some of the people we're dealing with here, for people to convince themselves that they've pulled themselves up by their own bootstraps and they've worked hard and they've done all this stuff, and it's just all those lazy people, and they could all have jobs if they want. I mean, that's essentially what Rand Paul said. Rand Paul, whose dad was Ron Paul, who was born to a guy that probably made millions of dollars off of racist newsletters and had a political name for him to inherit. And the rest, and I think 300,000 Kentuckians are losing unemployment insurance because of him, something like that, some large number. And yet he made all, you know, all these kinds of statements. And I really do think that some of these guys, I remember he said, you know, I'm a doctor. I don't rely on the government. People pointed out that he takes patients on Medicare. And he's like, well, doctors have the right to make a nice living, too. That was his actual response. So when you have to remember that you're dealing with people who have this disconnect. You know, Mitt Romney, who said he was a self-made man. You know, he didn't just take his parents' money, except for the house that they bought him initially for his family. Oh, and the stock investments he was able to live off of, you know, while he was making his way in the world and all the rest. And, of course, everybody has access to, right? Everybody does. They don't see it. They don't get it. They think they just say, well, you're lazy. You're part of the 47% or whatever it is. And you're different than I am. I worked hard, and they don't ever acknowledge the fact that they had either a hand up or literally a crane up above where most people start.
You know, not to put too fine a point on it, but the saying "pull yourself up by your bootstraps" was first introduced as being ironic. It is not something that you can do. And, you know, it sort of somehow morphed into this sort of superhuman capability that some people have. But the fact of the matter is, you cannot pull yourself up by your bootstraps. It was coined in its first usage. It was, in fact, to show the lunacy of that idea. The idea that you can do this all yourself in these type of situations. And so... it is. I don't know that there are sadists out there, but there are certainly people who just. It's just not their problem. I mean, they just have this perspective.
Well, yeah,
of, I
think
mine.
It's both. Yeah. I really do. I think there's some people it's not their problem. I think there's other people where it's good politically to demonize people. That's always popular and always, you know, helps you with a certain core group of people. And I really do. I think there are some people that I'm not saying they're sadists in that, oh, my God, I love it that you're being hurt, but it's that you deserve to be hurt because you haven't worked as hard as me.
Right.
I've worked to get to where I am. You haven't, so I'm sorry. You deserve to suffer because you're lazy. And it's by far, of course, most of the time based on a completely faulty premise. And I would say, again, to sort of take us back to where we started the conversation with de Blasio, you know, these guys getting up and making this inauguration, this is the stuff, again, that we've talked about and has driven me crazy about President Obama, Democrats in general, you know, the whole bully pulpit concept, which, you know, obviously was originally what Theodore Roosevelt talked about for just the presidency. But in the day of our modern media, particularly with social media and the way ideas fly around, the power of ideas, as we've seen, you know, for example, the moving the Overton window on what is acceptable in Social Security. So now we're talking about, you know, what we should have been talking about all along,
which is not cutting Social Security, but actually enhancing, adding to it. If Elizabeth Warren advocated for it, Tom Harkin, Sherrod Brown, obviously a lot of pundits, people give credit to Atrios, I know a friend of yours, a friend of mine, a great blogger, who did this. I mean, people who have, he wrote some columns for USA Today, people have influence as media figures, as well as political figures, that you should always be doing this on all issues. This is what the right has understood, again, which is the crazier and crazier. I mean, in the 1980s, when the Heritage Foundation was first drawing up its plan to go after Social Security, it was untouchable. There's no way you're going to go after it. Reagan, talked about making it more solvent. You went after it on the right at your peril. And now they're at a point where people, even Democrats, can talk about cutting it. And so, the right has moved the window on so many issues where the left has failed to do it.
I think Social Security, if I had to pick, I think in 2014, and frankly, over the next 3 or 4 years, I think we're going to see the expansion of Social Security become I don't think we're going to see it.
I think it's going to become a mainstream position, and I think to win a Democratic primary for the presidency, you're going to have to support it. And that is so interesting to me why, when you see Bill Clinton standing on that stage with de Blasio, that it's very clear, which is what I've tried to say to people recently, which, people who have bagged on Hillary Clinton, and I've said, look, I'm going to leave aside everything else and say, I don't care what people really believe. It'd be nice if they were believers, but I care what they do when they're in office.
Right.
And the thing about the Clintons is that they understand politics very well. Where, they've got a good sense of where things are. And I think they can see it. And this is why you need people speaking out on these issues. Because once a few mainstream political figures were willing to speak out and in favor of gay marriage, it became like wildfire.
Right.
It went viral.
Well,
it was a comfortable place for everybody to be. And I think there'll be a number of issues here that will be litmus tests that wouldn't have been in the past because people in both the media and politically elected figures have been willing to get up and do this. And that's why having de Blasio at the head of one of the largest cities in the world with such a big mic is hugely important. Why having Elizabeth Warren out there is hugely important. And many others, obviously they're the two that have been talked about the most. But there have been a lot of progressive victories. Garcetti out in Los Angeles. You've had a lot of very good victories in both city elections as well as more recently in some of these state elections, some very progressive people, Tammy Baldwin in Wisconsin. And this is going to make a difference, a huge difference going forward.
I think there are two factors that are going to add to this. I think one is that we are on one side of the culture wars at this point. I really do think that's the case. I mean, obviously, they're not over, but things like marriage equality, things like even legalization of pot on some level, these are all the drug war. I mean, there is a broad sort of, and I don't want to get sidetracked here, but we'll talk about the David Brooks piece in a second. But and I think that's on one hand that it's not enough for Democratic politicians, at least in blue states, to sort of say, I'm for marriage equality, and so I'm a liberal. Vote for me on this. I mean, it's no longer enough.
Andrew Cuomo cough?
Yeah, exactly. Andrew Cuomo no cough. And it's not enough to say that anymore. The other factor that's going to implicate this is that, one, we have seen in 2013 austerity policies debunked. Two, we are seeing increasingly more and more studies and definitive evidence of the failure of the 401k plan to provide for people's retirement. There are just basic realities that I think are crashing up against the corporate narrative. And I had some sort of really mixed feelings about seeing Bill Clinton swear in de Blasio. I mean, aside from, my skepticism about de Blasio, Bill Clinton was really, if you wanted to symbolize, and I think, at least in my mind, the corporatization of the Democratic Party, he would be a pretty good avatar for that because, this is the guy who was the head of the DLC before he became president.
Right. I sort of see it as the opposite symbolism.
Well, he may have come full circle. He's also a guy who, who sticks his finger up in the air and says, which way is the wind blowing? But
that he sees it blowing towards de Blasio and his and populist politics. And I really do think that the opportunity is there. We've seen it happen with Social Security in front of our eyes. We've now seen it happen with the minimum wage. This group of crazy right-wingers, Ralph Reed and Gary Bauer and all of them, are getting together with a plan to try to inject social issues into more races. God bless them for that.
Yes.
They're going to make it harder on their own side. But I guess my point is I think the left needs to get out there and we need to continue to do what we're doing on these other issues, but do them on additional ones. I mean, why can't, closing the carried interest loophole be a position that somebody must take in a primary, a presidential primary?
Right.
It should be. It's an utterly ridiculous fallacy that most people who I know who work on Wall Street even think is ridiculous. I mean, it is. It's patently ridiculous that anybody who's making $600 million a year is paying 15% taxes. So, I think there are other issues that are populist issues that can be pushed in the same way by coalitions and of politicians and people in the media and activists to the point where it's a requirement that you support those, and that's where we need to be.
Let's at least talk just briefly about the David Brooks pot piece, because it was and who else was it? Was it Ruth Marcus?
Ruth Marcus wrote it.
Ruth Marcus. Wow, like she's really trying to get around these days.
She likes the word fuddy-duddy a lot.
So you've got these two pieces.
I
just skimmed the Ruth Marcus one. The David Brooks one just sort of had my head spinning. He writes that, he smoked pot when he was in high school, I guess it was. And then, he and his friends grew out of it. One turned into a pothead, and they didn't stop smoking pot because of health reasons or all the, reefer madness, stuff. It's just because it was just seemed like a dumb thing for him to do. And he just matured out of it and he found finer things in life, I guess, like Chablis or something. I don't know. But
spending time with Bill Kristol, that stuff.
But there are two things that are sort of stunning about this. One is, let's for a moment just sort of take David Brooks at his, just in his own logic. He says, I didn't stop smoking weed because of health reasons. And I didn't stop smoking weed because it was illegal. I just grew out of it. Yet, then he goes on to say, it's so dangerous for us now to legalize marijuana because it could be cheaper. And then usage is going to go up. Not once did he cite cost as a reason for stopping smoking weed. In fact, back then, it was probably as cheap, if not cheaper, than it will be tomorrow or in the future with legalized pot.
There's also all those
and he doesn't say about
the efforts in other
legality.
Countries. They've shown
right.
It will not go up.
Right.
Or whatever.
But he doesn't talk about legality. The internal logic of his own piece is not there. And then what I think is really telling is that he talks about the sort of the moral turpitude of the country if they're all smoking pot, but without mentioning at all the war on drugs, which has, which of course for someone like him and Ruth Marcus, the war on drugs is completely meaningless. It never impacted them. It never implicated them. They never see it.
I'd like
they're
to hear if they spent
in
time in prison those few times that they had done it. Like,
and they don't have cousins or brothers or parents who are in jail for having, or have been stop and frisked because of marijuana. I mean, none of it. And what I think is what is encouraging to me is how quickly these two people were just laughed at for the exclusion of that analysis. I mean, in all sectors, it seems to me.
In the overall analysis, I mean, not impacting their families, but the analysis of productivity, if you want to look at it from an economic standpoint, but from a compassion standpoint, lives ruined by people arrested who get prison records because of this. People that turned to much worse criminals that were engaged in nonviolent criminal activity. The swelling size of our prison population, which is ridiculous, per capita bigger than what China has, and anybody else in the world for that matter, and ludicrous, the amount of money that costs. And on and on. It's just so utterly stupid. The whole thing makes no sense on any level. It is counterproductive at every level of our society, not to mention the incentive it provides for private prisons and those who own them.
For me, the most encouraging aspect of this is how quickly their analysis was debunked. Because of their blind spot, because of their privilege, was so massive, and it's so apparent. Whereas I'm not convinced that five, ten years ago that there would have been such a complete response to across the board about how sort of like privileged that argument is, putting aside. Whether or not you want to smoke pot, because all those other issues, just the existence of the drug war in and of itself is enough of a reason to decriminalize.
That's exactly right. Who cares? Throw aside all the rest of it. You know, the waste and the lives destroyed and the rest by our drug war is enough reason. You know, it's long past due. This has been a stupid policy, not based on science, forever. And it's good now that we've got a majority of people for the first time, in the more recent polling are in favor of legalization. So, hopefully that's why these things need to be on ballots for that reason also, because, don't wait for politicians to have the courage to do it.
All right. And lastly, I'm going to obviously be talking about the Snowden stuff more as the show goes on today, but certainly in the coming days, weeks, months. One thing that just really strikes me about this Snowden thing that, the Times has come out now and said, is editorialized for some form of clemency, some type of limited, not necessarily saying that he did nothing wrong, but saying that the value of what he did outweighs that which he the laws that he broke, because he was functioning as a whistleblower. What has also followed, sort of both in its wake and leading up to this, I think, is a sort of a broader awareness on the center left that there's also a tremendous amount of hypocrisy here when a guy like Clapper, who lied in front of the House. None of these people are calling for the prosecution of Clapper. That President Obama came into office saying, we're not going to really in any way seek to prosecute those who broke torture laws. Those who may have lied, lied us into an invasion and occupation of one of the greatest foreign policy blunders, killing hundreds of thousands of people, that our country has seen, at least in recent times. None of that. So there's a real acute awareness, I think, which goes hand in hand on some level with the drug war, that we are living in a society where we do not have equal application to the law. And it's ironic on some level, or I guess coincidental, or maybe it's not coincidental. 2 years ago, or 3 years ago, Glenn Greenwald was writing, had come out with a book basically with that argument. And, there seems to be a broader acceptance of this notion that there are two sets of rules, one for the establishment, including the financial sector, frankly, and then one and for the national security state, and then one for everybody else. That we really have seen a fundamental breakdown in the application of the outrage about the rule of law between those on the inside and those on the outside.
Yeah, well, and the thing is that, there's a couple things here. Obviously,
the founding of this country as a democracy, and we won't talk about all the problems that were obviously serious problems when it was founded, because we weren't equally applying laws. We had these people called slaves that obviously weren't living up to everything we were saying. But at the same time, the sort of, at least the notion was supposed to be that what had created tyrannies, like what was going on in England, was that, that we need to be a country of laws and not men, as they put it, right? That, that the law applied equally to everybody, and if it doesn't, if it applies arbitrarily and the people in power get to choose who it applies to, then you're not really a democracy, are you? And this breakdown, you know, I'm sure in past times, it's not like it didn't happen in the past. It's not like there weren't people that bribed people and got off and whatever. But the, but I think that the change, and I think you sort of hit it there, the wholesale societal acceptance. I mean, literally, we had people engage in one huge criminal act, you know, or many of them on Wall Street, and nothing's happened to any of them, obviously. You know, and more recently, some of these internal dealings have come out with, you know, which bank was, I wish I read the article recently, it was HSBC or one of them, where, you know, they couldn't do it, they couldn't put guys in jail because they were scared it would undermine it, it might bring the right bank down, and so there's always a reason why you can't do it, right? I mean, we have to pardon certain politicians. The country couldn't handle it if Nixon went to prison, so let's just get them, the long national nightmare needs to be over. And, you know, it almost seems like this is the way we look at it in politics. We look at it, which is, you know, then we judge that it's better for all of us if we don't send these people to prison. So we don't, which I think is a BS, obviously, reason. And people on the streets, obviously, every day have no protections like that. And they're thrown in jail for the most ridiculous of reasons. Hell, these days it could just be for protesting something. And have their lives ruined. And I mean, you can't, how a society like that does this continues to function. And you're right. That is the hypocrisy inherent in, you know, these very people that clamoring out for, you know, members of Congress who are attacking Snowden. You know what? Clean your own house out.
Right.
How many guys are sitting there right now that should have been investigated by the ethics committee for any number of things, but aren't? It's not happening. And I mean, you know, the right theoretically always claimed they believed in accountability and that they believed in incentives and disincentives. That's what capitalism is supposed to be about. Well, you tell me what the incentive is when you can break the law, make a lot of money, and not pay a price for it.
Well, Cliffy, we will discuss this and more as 2014 continues, but glad to have you here for the upcoming year.
And, I look forward to it.
We'll talk to you again soon. Always a pleasure.
All right, man.
All right.
Thanks a lot, buddy. I appreciate it.
All right, folks. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll be getting a movie review from Marc Maron, and maybe we will get a little bit of an explanation about an update, if you will, on that promise.
An accountability moment?
Yeah, an accountability moment. Maybe we should even have pulled that that promise on audio. I wonder if it's too late to do that. Let's see if we can do that during the break. All right, we'll be right back, folks. Lose your mind. We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report on the phone from Hollywood, California, where he lives, even when he's not there, apparently. He's always in Hollywood. Mr. Mark Maron. Hello, Mark. Good to talk to you in 2014.
Hey, it's nice to talk to you, but I have to be honest with you right out of the gate. I don't like the way you frame this. I don't live in Hollywood. I live a humble, low to the ground life in Highland Park, California, in a small two-bedroom, one-bathroom house. I don't like how you're setting me up for this.
I'm sorry. Is that construction right here in the background?
No, not yet. No, okay. There's no construction yet. I'm going to be building a large addition just for cats, just to keep wild cats and damaged cats in my house. Do you have a problem with that, Sam?
No.
If I build a feral cat addition to my house?
I don't know why you got so defensive about the Hollywood thing. I mean, I think it's pretty clear that, you have a TV show now, as far as I understand. Your podcast is fairly successful, is my understanding. You're on all these Hollywood publications. I don't know why you don't sort of embrace that.
Oh, you're right. I've been working a long time, and I've been working hard in show business. Mm. And I think that some people like to frame that in a certain way. You know, when people use the word Hollywood like you do with that tone.
What? What tone?
No. I know that you were in show business and that, you struggle with this. I know that because, we spent a lot of time together. But I just want you to know I'm the same Mark you always knew. I'm your friend.
Oh, I know.
I'm living a reasonable life. I'm not out of my mind with ego or anything else.
Now,
I'll still talk to you. Is what I'm saying.
No, I know, I know that. No, I know that. I know you're still a down to earth guy. In fact, the last time we spoke before we arranged this hastily, I believe was sometime in October, if I remember correctly. You were sitting with the writer of your program, Dave Anthony, and you were saying, "Hey, we're writing you into the show." You were referencing, of course, your show Marin on IFC, and you were referencing something you had told me back in April of 2013, or I guess it was May, which was that you were going to include me in the show. Now, of course, I went out, made some promises, incurred some obligations, and based upon that assessment, knowing that my big break was coming, and promised my wife certain things, and subsequent to that, we had a child. and then the weird thing happened. After that conversation in October, every time I would tweet at you or text you or call you, I would never hear back. Why was that, Mark?
So, all right, well, first of all, let me know when the kid needs a bike. you can say it's from you, whatever you want to do. The other thing, look, Sam, I'll be honest with you. Dave is one of the writers, and I had thought that we would include you because, you and I have such a wonderful chemistry, right? And we're very funny together. And we came up, I think, not just one story, but two stories that might have been good for us. I can tell you the story if you'd like to hear the story.
Sure.
One of them. Well, you know what? I'll tell you what. Maybe we shouldn't do that because, if there's an outside chance that I do more episodes, maybe we can, go back to these stories that were, that didn't make it this year. But
An outside chance and this and that. Last time you were on, you were promising it was ironclad. Now you're not even giving a promise. What were the stories? Let's hear the stories. Wait, it's going to ruin it? You think, if we leak these things out, it's not going to happen.
No, but they were good stories. If you want me to be honest or you want me to jerk you around? All right, the bottom
line, I'd like some honesty. That's your big shtick, isn't it?
All right, honesty. Honestly, no. Still, oddly, nobody likes you. That you know, there's just people in the business that I don't know what the hell you did, but Jesus, man. I mean,
really?
You say, yo, oh Christ! You say Sam Cedar, and literally, executives, women primarily.
Where?
Just
at IFC?
Oh, I don't know. IFC everywhere. I mean, this was just in random conversations I have in general.
Well, what difference does that make? Your show's on IFC. Yes, I've made some enemies in my time. All great figures do. I mean, but
not,
at IFC.
It's weird. It was weird. It's not just enemies, but like when I brought your name up, I felt like I was in trouble. Like, you know, like it was the reaction was that, you know, tangible. I'm like, we're thinking about doing one with Sam Cedar. And then I was sort of worried whether or not I would be able to finish the season because of the
That's interesting. Do you know that story of Chris Clue? Is that how you pronounce his name? From the Minnesota Vikings? Who showed some moral courage?
Yeah, I do. I know that story.
Okay. I mean, I don't know why that came to mind as you were talking about how you cowered in the face of some IFC executives.
I didn't cower. I just said it'd be no problem not using Sam.
Oh, I see. Okay.
I didn't feel cowardly at all. I'm like, you're right. You know what I mean? It's one episode. We got a lot more ideas. And yeah, frankly, I know he is difficult. That's not cowering. That's just being reasonable.
Oh, so it was because I'm difficult to work with. Is that what it was?
I didn't get into it with them. I just felt that there was a lot of discomfort there.
Really? So you had two?
No, not really, Sam. Not really. Not really.
Well,
we came up with a couple ideas, and it really just came down to a few of the stories are sort of a little bit inside baseball, and the idea that the story that you know we had come up with for you and I was a little bit political and a little bit show business. It was frankly a good story, but we just had too many of those, too many inside ones. So
I was going to say,
many
good stories, or just like too many. Like your show's inside baseball. Why don't you embrace it? What's it? You know, it's IFC for God's sakes. You're not on like NBC on Thursday nights.
All right. Sorry. All right. Look, we just thought it would be too big an expense to fly you out.
Well, the time to tell me that would have been before Nikki and I decided to have another child. That's all I'm saying. Okay, because plans were made. We moved ahead with certain dreams that we had based upon. The promise that.
What do you want? You want me to send you a bond of some kind? You want me to?
Yes.
Like what? You want? Do they still have the things we got on our bar mitzvah?
Yeah,
like
double E savings bond. I don't know if they still issue those, but.
I think I can do that.
It's 25 years to mature. I think it was.
Right. So that'd be good. So let's say I buy one for $100. I put it in the kid's name. What's his name? Saul.
Mm-hmm.
And then in 25 years, he can go through his stuff and be like, oh, this is that thing. Is it worth? What's it worth now?
You know what? I think I would prefer bitcoins. Maybe a couple of bitcoins for Saul.
In Saul's name for when he turns 18.
Do you know what bitcoins are?
I'm not a retard. Come on, Sam. Yeah, I know what bitcoins are.
All right. I didn't say you were a retard. I don't know why you... You're really, really defensive. You know, for a guy, for a guy who's like so,
Can I wait? I need to make an apology to your audience and to everybody involved. I apologize for using that word. It's old Mark. It came out of a place that that is younger and sometimes reacts differently. I'm very against myself using that word publicly, and I apologize to all those people that have intellectually disabled people in their lives, and I just want to make that apology quick.
Wow, this is quite a turnaround, because back in the day, you would get really angry at the notion of someone taking offense to your using that word.
I know. I used to defend it on stage, even.
That's interesting. And what changed?
Yeah, it did change. You know why it changed?
No, what changed?
Because a couple of people. I'll tell you what changed, Sam. I'll tell you.
All right, take it easy.
I'm all right. Are you all right?
Yeah, you just seem to be getting worked up. I just asked you a question. That's all.
Well, I feel like you got me on the ropes here because you made this horrible decision to have a child, and you're somehow hanging it on me because of your general overall failure.
I'm just doing it based on a promise you made. But that's not important. Just go ahead. Go forward. What changed?
No, I got some emails from people that made reasonable cases to why that word is hurtful, even if it means something to me. It's hurt. What really changed my mind about that word is that it's not hurtful to what do you call them? What is the right way to say it?
Mentally challenged.
Fine. See, you don't even know. There's a lot of different. The jury's still out on what's the right thing. So the mentally challenged. The problem is, I got letters from people who were hurt by that word, who were not mentally challenged, but people who spend their lives with mentally challenged people or have mentally challenged people in their lives, that it hurt them deeply. And then I understood it, you know. So I just use it on my cast occasionally. And I guess, you know, you pulled it out of me somehow.
I was just curious. I mean, it's funny because I mentioned back in the day, and we just had somebody send us a tweet saying that they heard you on a 3-hour Joe Rogan podcast where you talked about Air America extensively, where you lauded John Benjamin. Apparently, my name never came up.
Is that true?
That's what I've been told. I mean, I'm not taking offense. It's just curious to me because it just sounds like, I mean, that would be hard to mention your time at Air America and somehow reference the guy who does my show's opening voice, but not me. I mean, it's weird.
You know, Sam, I feel like I mention you a lot, you know, and usually right after I mention you,
well, like
conversation,
the third, like the minute after the third hour, is that generally where that comes in?
No, but just in general conversation about my life, about people I've worked with and about people who've had a big influence on me.
Mm-hmm.
And then like I bring you up and usually within seconds of whatever the other person says, I say something like, yeah, I don't know what happened. And yeah, he did have, you know, he was going a different, yeah, I don't know why. And then it just gets awkward. So I think with the Rogan thing, I probably just want to keep the conversation going and not,
right,
you know, have to.
And to be
out.
Fair, you did say, when you spoke to Market Watch, that I had a little podcast. So that is,
you do have a little podcast.
To be fair, you did say that. Now,
right. So what? I don't know. You're saying that like it's a bad thing. I was acknowledging
No, I said
and...
to be fair. I actually said that was actually a positive in your column.
But do you understand how I used you in that conversation? Do you understand?
Oh, I know how you used me, Mark. I know how you used me.
In the patent troll dialogue, I was trying to set up a Davy and Goliath thing, and you were Davy.
I see.
Like, I can't be Davy. You can be Davy.
Mm. Oh, I appreciate that. That's very
like
nice.
When I said little podcast, I was like, but watch out with that. He's got a slingshot, that guy. You know what I mean?
You left the slingshot part out, but that's okay. I mean, it was more like, not sort of like Goliath and just like one of those other guys like Bill, like one of the guys that Goliath stepped on before Davey got there. But that's all right. All right, look.
I couldn't fill out the whole story. I was working in metaphors. I expected people to understand it. That was the backstory. That was the deeper poetic meaning that I had invested in it. And it's not for me to explain everything to everybody. Sam, you know, this is what's happened in the day age of the internet, is everybody needs everybody to explain. Listen, man, you're Davey to me. You know what I mean? You're Davey.
Well, that's very sweet. That's very sweet. Yeah. Now let's start. Let's talk turkey here. Mark, one of the times that you did not respond to me when I texted you because you were too afraid to tell me that somehow that episode that you were writing just sort of disappeared was a time that I was riding. I was with Mila and I was listening to your interview with Tommy Stinson from, I think, probably one of my favorite all time bands ever, The Replacements. And you were talking about wanting to get some of those early Twin Tone records. I texted you to tell you that I had Let It Be. I had Sorry Ma, Forgot to Take Out the Trash. I had Hootenanny, all in their original releases. Boink, Pleased to Meet Me. I got these albums as soon as they came out. And I never heard back from you. But I know that you're interested in albums. I've got I don't know how many albums I have. Honestly, it is like, I don't know. What am I doing? Is this 3 feet? It's like a 3 feet plastic container of albums that I have.
You got them right there?
No, I don't have them right here. I'm in my studio. No, I've got them in a basement somewhere. I haven't looked at them in ages, but I know that, Let It Be is in there. I know that, I mean, gosh.
Okay. All right. So, yeah. I see. I went back and I found the text. And you're right. I didn't respond to you. You know why?
Yeah.
Because I was busy somehow. You got away from me. You got to realize, Sam, I have a lot of love for you, and I care about you and your future and your children.
No, I know you were probably doing a 3-hour podcast with Joe Rogan. So when do you have time to text? I mean, I am somebody. I'm here.
I did one podcast with Joe Rogan. We had a pretty good time, and I didn't know it was that important to you.
It's not that important to me. I've just never even heard of a 3-hour podcast.
Do you want a kettlebell? Do you want me to ask Joe if he'll send you a kettlebell or some vitamins? Would that make you feel better?
What is that? What is a kettlebell?
It's a weight ball. You can stand out on your porch in the snow in Hudson and do squats with a gorilla or monkey face weight ball that Joe has manufactured. Or maybe you want
to buy
it. Is
that what he does? Sell a weight ball? See, that's the key to this, is that I need to have some product to sell that I manufacture
I agree
with you. Or brand.
I agree with you.
I don't know what it would be.
You know,
glasses,
like he also sells fleshlights. Do you need a fuckable thing that you can hold?
Of what?
Like a machine? A fleshlight. That's a masturbation toy. Oh. So I could call Joe as a apology.
I'm married. I don't even masturbate anymore. Come on.
Wow.
Yeah. Listen, I've seen the implications. Seen the implications
of what
happens.
You're in a rare position where you have a studio and two houses. It would seem that you could at least find some time and a place to do that.
No, it's not a question of time or place. It's just, you know, you got to be careful. You don't want to get involved in anything like that.
Oh, you're afraid that it would make its way back and in somehow?
Yes.
Okay. I know that fear.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, I'll get you. I'll call Joe and I'll say Sam needs a kettlebell and some brain vitamins. And, you know, I just wanted to, maybe he'll do it on the air. And I'll say, my buddy Sam Cedar, who I worked with years ago, is very talented and funny, but seems to.
Does Rogan talk politics at all?
Not really with me, a little bit, but not too much. You know, we were talking old stories and some conspiracy stuff, but not straight up politics.
I used to play softball with that guy back in Boston.
Yeah, we've known him a long time. I was a little nervous about doing the show, frankly.
Yeah, I'm not surprised by that. What about Corolla?
But
did you do Corolla's show?
I haven't done it in a while, and he never talks politics when I'm on it. He just talks, and you sit there and try to find a way in to say something.
I find it really annoying when that guy talks about politics because he's, you know, with all due respect, he's sort of an idiot.
No, I think that, like, you know, his
don't
version...
You agree?
I think that he plays the underdog, and then when he starts talking politics, it's not from the right place.
Yeah, but I mean, do you think he's an idiot when he talks about politics?
What do you want? Something to tweet later? Look.
This is you know, news and politics podcast. I got to break something here, buddy.
Look, I do a show occasionally. I think Adam's a good broadcaster, and we don't discuss politics.
Okay, no, but that's not what I asked you.
He and I disagree politically, and I think that his politics is... Yeah. What about those records?
Yeah, let's talk about the records. Now, you know, I went on some music price guide. I didn't realize how much that Replacements album's worth, like $135.
So you wait. Now look. All right. So you went and did research.
Well, I don't even know what I have there, but I'm looking at like. David Bowie, Suffragette City, from with an Australian picture sleeve single, which is mega rare, is worth over $2,000.
But you have that record?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I wouldn't have anything from Australia.
Well, you know, I think
it's possible. There's, I mean, who knows what's in there? That's all I'm saying.
I understand. But like the fact that you went online to do this research, you know, sullied the deal because I was banking on negotiating with a moron.
Mm.
And a vinyl moron. That's what I was like. I got it. This is in the bag. Sam doesn't know anything about vinyl. He just has some old records. If I could just buy the box off him, you know, at a good price that I think would be good for me, and also he'd be, you know, probably too dumb or uninterested to know what he has in there, then this would be a good deal for me.
You know, I'll tell you something. It's funny because people were saying to me, like, how long do you think it will be before Maron stops talking about politics, just goes and gets famous in Hollywood, and then becomes a Republican? And now I know the time span. I mean, you just described basically what the the Republican worldview, right? It's business. We'll take him for what he's worth.
Okay. You know, you can call it whatever you want, but I was just hoping to take advantage of your lack of knowledge about vinyl.
Yeah.
I like what you're trying to do, but I'm not a Republican.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. Then let's talk turkey, because I think there's some Led Zeppelin in there too, buddy.
I already have all the Zeppelin, so you're going to have to come at it from a different angle.
I got some good comedy albums in there. I got Albert Brooks's first comedy. Well, I got
those. What?
I got all the.
What about music? No. What?
Well, what other music? I mean, it's, you know, I can't remember what. I mean, I don't know. Husker Du.
Look, we're the same age. We're the same age. We like a lot of the same things.
Yeah.
But you know, the Replacements. You said you had two of those other Replacement records.
I have every Replacement record.
Those sounded good. Yeah.
I have every Replacement.
Hootenanny.
Record. Hootenanny. Trash. Boink.
I don't have Boink, and I don't have Take Out the Trash.
Oh, well, do you have Pleased to Meet Me, the original?
Yes, I have that.
Hmm. All right, well.
And I have the original Let It Be.
What else
and
is happening think that day? Really Echo and the Bunnymen, The Cure. What else? Green on Red.
These are things I didn't know about you. Well, let's talk about Echo and the Bunnymen and The Cure, Sam, because I don't know what that says about you, but I'd like to, you know, you okay?
What? It was 1990,
Cure, really?
It was 1984, whatever it was.
And you were listening to The Cure?
I don't know if I'm in a, yeah, it was going around. I think that first one, the one on the beach.
It was
or whatever,
going around.
Huh? Yeah, it was going around.
Okay. All right. That's all.
From like probably like the early 80s to the early 90s was when I was buying all those albums. This is a treasure trove.
The Cure.
This is a treasure
trove. Now, how much Cure did you listen to? Did you wear eye makeup?
That one album, the Camus one. I can't remember. But, you know, everybody was into Camus those days.
Oh, so now you're a guy that does what everyone else does. That's interesting. You've really changed a lot. I'm glad and proud of you. You have grown up a little bit.
Yeah. Well, that was 25 years ago.
Okay.
Actually,
so, all right, look, how much you want for it? What are we starting at for the box?
I mean, you know, you who's paying shipping? You paying shipping?
You know, out of a slight guilt that, you know, I led you down a path of a second child and could not follow through, I'll pay the shipping.
All right, great. Now that we got that out of the way, you're paying the shipping $15,000.
What? Are you going to throw your Geiger sculpture in? Because for $15,000... I should get the Geiger sculpture that you can't throw away.
It's Geiger, and I could throw it away if I could lift it. The point is, there could be, for all I know, there could be a rare David Bowie album in there. There could be a Little Reuben unreleased LP acetate, Detroit psych funk deep soul here. Could be in there. The Concrete Rubber Band could be in there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
mm-hmm.
I'm just going, I mean, and these are worth like $2,000, just one album.
What website are you on right now, Silly? Just tell me what it is.
Music Guide, musicpriceguide.com.
I'll tell you what. Here's my offer.
What is it?
When you get up there, you know, you'll call me up and we'll go through the box. I'll tell you what I need. I'll offer you a good price on the records I don't have, and you can send them to me and I'll pay for shipping. But, you know, $15,000 is like, are you out of your fucking mind? Do I look like a moron?
I mean, I'm just listening to your voice. I have no idea what you look like these days.
Yeah. Hey, let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
How's everything going? How's Saul and how's the family?
Saul's great. He's not sleeping. Everybody else is fine. Myla's got a bit of an attitude. I appreciate it. Nikki appreciates it less than I do. You know, so keeping on. All right, so we'll do the
album. Do you want to do a movie segment?
Yes, that's where I was actually going now. What should I watch on streaming? I should say that I just watched American Hustle, because I got that as like a SAG DVD. I've heard you didn't particularly like it. I saw my buddy Brad Anderson over the vacation, who directed Next Stop Wonderland and Happy Accidents, and actually Session 9, a bunch of other things. I think he's actually done a movie with Christian Bale. He wasn't terribly enamored with it. He thought it was sort of, he gave the same sort of critique that you did. I enjoyed it, was somewhat distracted by like Louis being in it and Bradley Cooper and it being shot in Worcester, which some people didn't know. Some of it was shot in Worcester, Massachusetts.
Louis did it. I thought Louis did a great job and Bradley Cooper did a great job. And I thought my thing about the movie is like the Silver Linings Playbook, his last movie in The Fighter. But I watched the Silver Linings Playbook like once a month.
Really?
I love that movie. It kills me. Love it. Love The Fighter. I'm a huge fan of David O. Russell. There's no question. I think he's a genius. I think Three Kings is a masterpiece. I love the guy. So and it's the same with the Coen brothers. So when they make a movie, you know, with the Coen brothers, a little different because quite a few of their movies, I'm like, maybe I don't get it. I might have to watch it a lot more, or maybe it's just not my thing. But, you know, with David O. Russell, you know, I was juiced up. I was excited. And I watched it twice, dude. And the second time I locked into the tone a little better. There's a lot of rawness in that movie. But like, it was just, the only thing I didn't quite get is that with those kind of movies where you have all that, about the crime and it's not, I don't know what you would call it.
A caper? Yeah, caper movie?
Yeah, kind of a caper movie, but it was really a comedy. And like I said to you yesterday, I think it was like one of those 70s comedies where there's probably violence on the periphery and there's a lot of pain and weirdness going down, but it's sort of neutered to serve the broader comedy of the movie. And I think it was definitely, you know, obviously a comedy. So it was somewhere in the middle between, like, I liked the story and it seemed kind of interesting and about the politics of it and about, you know, that time period. But that was all sort of kind of put on the back burner to serve these characters and serve the comedy. And I think it was good for that. So it might be me and not really a statement on the movie. I might not have.
How closely did it track Abscam?
I don't know. That's your thing. That should be a whole hour of your show. I mean, I don't know what you're doing over there.
Yeah, that's probably, we probably should have spent a whole hour on that. All right. Well, be that as it may, what would you recommend that I do watch, Mark?
Well, here's what I think. Because I get a lot of screeners because I'm in a lot of these guilds. I'm a union guy.
Yeah,
I'm a union guy.
Me too. I got the screeners.
I know, dude. Did you get all of them, though? Did you get Inside Llewyn Davis?
I don't think I did get that.
Inside Llewyn Davis? Did you get that?
I don't think I did.
Really? You didn't get the new Coen Brothers movie?
So I didn't know. I haven't opened all the packages. I don't have time to open all the packages.
Well, maybe you're just like on the lower part of the list. That you're
possible.
Not working so much.
Possible.
Yeah. What?
Possibly.
So I saw the Robert Redford, All Is Lost. I did not understand why I was watching it. I just spent the entire movie going like, wow, Redford is old.
I thought that I heard good things about that. All right, so I didn't get that in the mail, anyways. So what else you got?
I didn't understand it. It didn't. You know, it was okay. It was out on the water. It took a long time for a shark to show up, and I didn't know who that guy was. And you know, he seemed to do all right with a couple cans of beans, and thank God for the life raft. It got very close, but I don't know. I saw Captain Phillips. That was compelling. Very compelling.
What is that? Is that Tom Hanks movie? I'm not going to niche. What else?
All right. Fine. Yeah, I thought it was good. I watched Lone Survivor. That's a political movie. I'd be interested to see, you know, what you thought of that, about the four guys on the covert operation in Afghanistan with Mark Wahlberg and that guy I like.
Wait,
Ben Foster.
Is this streaming? I can't go out and watch a movie.
These are screeners. I was under the impression that we're in the union and that you were.
I didn't get that one. I got the one I got was like The Butler, which I had really not a lot of interest in.
I got four of those. I got like three or four Butlers.
Why are you on multiple lists? I don't understand.
Well, it's between SAG, WGA, and AFTRA. I seem to get a lot of screeners. Mm-hmm. I'm going to watch 12 Years a Slave. Okay, well, how about Nebraska? Can you stream that? You can't stream that. I enjoyed that movie a lot. I thought Nebraska was great with Bruce Dern and Will Forte. It was shot in black and white by Alexander Payne. But, like, he's the first guy to really use digital black and white in a way that was stunning. Like, he took advantage of composition.
That's an older movie, isn't it, Nebraska?
No, it's brand new.
Oh. Well, yeah, I mean,
it's
I won't be able to
watch you can't keep up with this stuff. You have a kid and a show. Inside Llewyn Davis, the Coen Brothers movie, after seeing it twice, once I got the tone of it, it's a good movie. It's a good movie for creative people who are struggling in a way.
Jesus.
And it's a good movie about, you know, accepting. It's a good movie.
It,
you know,
great. I'll be able to watch it in a year when it comes out on streaming. What can I watch now?
What do you want me to get on Netflix? Did you see Blue Jasmine, or was the Louis presence too much for you to handle?
What's that?
Blue Jasmine? That's the new Woody Allen movie with Cate Blanchett, Andrew Dice Clay, and Woody Allen. And Louis.
Well, first off, is that out on streaming?
Oh. I don't know. Maybe it's streaming. No, it's not. All right.
Oh, Jesus.
What? Tell me the new movie that, I don't know. Did you see
nope.
Francis Ha, the Noah Baumbach movie?
No,
did you see that?
Of course not.
Maybe that's streaming. I don't know what's streaming. What do you want to review, Goodfellas? What do you want me to do?
Well, if I hadn't seen Goodfellas, that would have been a great movie to recommend.
You want to talk about The Godfather? You want me to give you a review of The Godfather?
Oh, Jesus.
That you can stream?
This is easy stuff, buddy. Everybody else seems to come on and do it.
Would you tell me a movie that you haven't seen that comes up on your menu? I don't, you know, what?
This is The End.
So you want to, what's that? I think I saw that movie. What is, oh, that, oh, the Simon Pegg movie?
I don't know. I just I saw that, and I think I was thinking, like, I should watch this. Somebody said something about it being good.
Oh, it's out on DVD now. Do you like Simon Pegg and Edgar Wright? Do you like that the British kind of, you know, did you like the TV show? Do you like their movies? Do you like
Oh, wait, this is The End of Seth Rogen, but then there's another one. The World is Ending or something like that?
Oh, yeah, World's End. World's End is Edgar Wright and Simon Pegg, and this is The End of Seth Rogen movie. I saw that. You want me to review that for you?
Which one should I see? Oh, apparently Francis Haas is streaming on Netflix.
That's good. Are you friends? You're friends with that guy. Didn't you do a movie with Noah Baumbach?
Who's Noah Baumbach?
Or no.
I don't think so.
He did The Squid and the Whale?
No, I didn't do that. I wasn't in that movie.
What movie were you in?
I was in I don't know, a bunch of movies.
All right, so not one of his. I thought that was a good movie, and it was very relatable to people like us. World's End is a big...
Which one? Francis Ha?
Yeah, you'd like that movie, I think.
Okay.
You'd probably be a little judgmental of it, because, like, you know, it seems like something you might have been able to do had you gone a different way. Mm. But wait, so End of the World, the Seth Rogen, James Franco, that movie?
Yeah, was that good?
I thought it was funny. I thought, you know, they're literally dealing with big biblical themes, and they're all playing themselves. And there's definitely some incredibly funny moments in that movie. If you like those guys, you like.
I understand. I understand. You gotta, after that blow up you had with James Franco, I guess you gotta now sort of like.
No. It's not about him. He doesn't know me. He doesn't care. But what?
What are your feelings about James Franco after that whole thing?
It's just like, you know, like he's trying very hard to be accepted as something other than an actor, as being a sort of, you know, sophisticated intellectual art guy, and that's fine. I just think he should relax a little bit.
And I thought we were going to have to cut that one up to make it juicy.
I like that Harmony Korine movie he's in, though. That was pretty good. Right. Spring Breakers. You can watch that. But I would recommend both World's End and End of the World as good movies to see.
All right. Fair enough. Well, Mark, as
always.
Right,
so we're going to talk about the records. We'll, we're going to shelf the Cedar Marin story of Marin for maybe a season 3. I don't know what's going to happen with that. But okay. It really just came down to which one of these.
Well, we'll fit it in after the interview in the garage. Yeah, Kindler. You know, Kindler's all over that show.
But this was really a story about me and you that didn't make it.
All right, whatever, buddy. Yeah, no, I understand.
No, but I think what's happening now, that by the time, you know, if I do get an opportunity to do more shows, you know, the stress of your life is going to be so much, you know, more intense. So the story will actually work better. Well, off the air, I'll tell you the story.
Okay. All right. Well, everybody, Mark Maron, I'm glad we got this annual phone call over with early in the year. We won't have this hanging over our heads.
Is there anything else? Are you going to go check the records for me? And look, you know, I would invite you out for some time, but there's nowhere for you to stay in my house.
What? You just said you had a 2-bedroom. You're
building
a room
for
cats.
That, yeah. The second bedroom doesn't have a bed in it. I mean, I don't know. It's just empty.
Get an air mattress.
I have one of those. You don't mind that? So I'd come out any time.
Are you kidding? I've been sleeping on the floor next to my kid's crib.
Really? Is that what you have to do?
Well, it is when you... I mean, the problem is, like, he sleeps in the room with us. There's no room for him to go anywhere. We got a mini crib. We still can't fit it through the door, and we don't have anywhere to put it. So we sleep in the room with him. And Nikki sleeps on the couch while I'm in there, because if he sees Nikki, he's just like... He's like a zombie. Like, I just watched, actually... The first 2 episodes of Walking Dead, and I saw the episode where they rub themselves to make themselves smell like the zombies, and that's what it's like. That's like what a baby does with his mother. He can smell her from, like, she's got to be out of the room, or he won't even acknowledge the existence of the father. That's another
man. I am so you're making
I'm
me
saving
so
that
sad
story
that...
for, I'm saving that story for Joe Rogan. So I will.
Oh really?
Yeah.
It's just making me sad that I'm not living the life you're living, that I missed that whole thing, the zombie sleeping on the floor part.
Well, maybe you could, finally have me on your podcast, and we could talk.
When are you coming to L.A.? When are you coming out?
Oh, you never do any podcasts in New York? Never record any in New York? Give me a break.
In all honesty, okay, I've not been in New York since I last talked to you. And the next time I'm in New York, we will sit down. Well, you know what? Maybe we should. Maybe I'll just take. Could you just send me the tape of this, and I'll release it as a podcast? And I'll interview you.
Majority.fm. What?
I will.
Become
when I
a member
the next
today
time,
at Majority Report. Sure, I can send you this.
Here, I got a new pitch. I have a new pitch. When I come to New York, probably in February, I come up to Hudson to go through your records, and then you and I go over to Tommy Simpson's house and see if he'll buy your copy of Let It Be.
That would be awesome.
What?
Yeah, I don't know why it has to be so involved, but...
I don't even think he has one. Like, because you remember when I talked to Stinson, he was like, yeah, I don't know how much those are worth. I sincerely got the feeling that he might not have it.
All right, Mark, what do you got? Nothing else to do today? All right, I got to go.
All right, bye, Sam.
All right, bye, Mark. Thanks for doing this. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Yeah.
Man. It's like an entirely different show.
That was a bit different, though. Usually he's the one telling you he's got to leave.
Yeah, I know. Apparently it's slow time, and his, this could be it. Maron's career on the wane. Mark Maron now doing extended podcast interviews. 3 hours with Joe Rogan, 40 minutes with me. That's supposed to be the short segment. All right. Do we have a song from Jimmy Reefer Cake? Yeah, this is...
I'm exhausted.
Yeah.
It's called I Just Want to Say Thanks.
All right.
But I just want to say thanks. Thanks for what you said about Casual Friday. It was kind. With Reefer Cake songs, it always feels like my day to shine. I got ideas to share from all the hypocrisy think tank. The world is cold as hell, and for your support, I just want to say thanks. Here's the bad news. Album sales are pathetic. Oh well. Another $30 a year to stay on iTunes. I rejected it. Oh well. But you can still buy my songs on Music for Good through Reverb Nation. Half the money goes towards providing water in impoverished nations. The other half goes to me. It'll probably go in my propane tank. 'Cause it's cold as hell, and for your support, I just wanna say thanks.
Oh, that was very sweet and funny. Yeah.
That was really good.
Jimmy Reefer Cake, starting off 2014 strong. Should we do a Freebie Friday for 2014?
We might as well.
Yeah. Right, it's already 1:32.
Yeah. We'll go through some IMs and some phone calls here, and then we will skedaddle.
After all that best of freebies and a Freebie Friday right after, you Freebie members should be prepared for less free stuff coming your way.
That's right.
Week.
We're going to have to, in all honesty, we're going to try and, I don't know, bring in a consultant or something. But I feel like we need to incent people to become members more. This Friday, Freebie Friday, is just getting out of hand. All right, let's go to the phones. Been waiting for a while. Calling from an 808 area code. Who's this?
Hey, this is Bronson. I'm calling from Maui.
Bronson from Maui?
Yes.
Hi, Bronson. How are you?
I was just on the Matt DiGeronimo show earlier, debating with him.
You were just on the Matt DiGeronimo show debating with him? Okay.
Yeah, I thought you destroyed him in the first debate. I'm a huge fan of yours, but I am an anarchist, so I imagine we disagree on a lot of issues.
That you and I disagree on a bunch of issues.
Yeah. So I'm not here to talk about light bulbs or owning slaves. What I would like to talk about is the domestic spying program and the illegal drone war and things of that nature.
Okay. Well, what do you want to say?
Yeah, so basically, I think that government should not exist because I believe that the United States government is a net evil in this world. Like, though it could, you know, possibly be doing some good things, all the bad things that we do in this world far outweigh any good that the government might be doing. So, based on that, I don't think the government should exist.
Do you think there's any government in the world that is a net positive?
Not really, no.
So you just don't think there should be any governments?
No, not at all. Because, I believe in the non-aggression principle. I think, initiating violence and force against people is wrong, no matter who does it.
Right.
Whether I do it to someone else or if I elect somebody to do it for me, I think it's wrong. I'm against war. I'm against initiating violence. I don't have a problem with self-defense.
But, okay.
But that's another issue.
Well, so, and how would, let's say, a country of 300 million people, how would they... I guess, would they still be a country? Do you believe in nation states?
No. Nations are social constructs, much like gender. They're not real things. Corporations aren't real things. They're
right.
Created by the government. I didn't say that a corporation is a real person. The government says that.
Right. No, I agree. I agree.
People don't believe in these things.
I agree. All right. So how would we organize in your worldview? And I think we're going to probably need to have most of this conversation another time. But I mean, how would we organize?
Basically on the community level, from the ground up, individuals, families, communities, and they can just get bigger like that. Noam Chomsky has a lot of ideas like that, community-based organizations. I don't think we should have nation states.
Okay. If I thought what you were talking about was possible and wouldn't lead to sort of more feudalism on some level, it seems to me that civilization has been on a progression, has progressed to where, at least theoretically, there's been sort of more justice. I mean, I guess at a time where you had much smaller world populations, I don't know what life would have been like if we, 5,000 years ago, let's say, Yavna or wherever it would be. I mean, I don't have a real sense of, I imagine life would have been, I really have no idea. I think, the point is that we have sort of progressed to theoretically systems that are less net negative than they were then. I mean, technology has allowed for a greater capacity to kill in numbers, but I don't know that we have in any, that the times were any less brutal, 700 years ago or 5,000 years ago. I think that if governments, their existence are net negatives, which I don't know that I would agree just in general with that idea. But if it is the case, I think it's less net negative than it was when you had feudal systems or when you had, some form of quasi deities ruling, like a Caesar or something.
Right. But I believe as time went on, society progresses, and with technology and information, I just believe that government is becoming obsolete, more and more. We just don't really need them. They're kind of like, I would say, a nuisance to society, a net drain on us, where it's almost like, they create this idea that they're a necessary evil, but that idea means that evil is necessary, which I don't agree with. I don't think that it's necessary. I think we can find some other way to cooperate within society without, having a government and politicians. I think politicians,
yeah, that would be nice.
As a class of society,
that would be nice.
Are completely useless.
Well, I don't necessarily agree with that, but you're saying that they will be supplanted by technology. That would be nice. I'd need to see some type of even broad outline on how we're going to get there. And, yes, it would be great if we could live, without, violence, where we could rely on everybody to, follow social mores, without, without violence, where people would engage in, I guess, some type of unregulated commerce and bartering things based upon everybody sort of just pledging to be good. I just don't think that that is the real world. But if you got a plan, certainly send it to me at majorityreporters@gmail.com. But call in another time. We can continue this conversation.
Okay.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Bye. You calling from a 267 area code. Who's this?
Hey, Sam. It's Chuck. You're a recovering libertarian.
Hi, Chuck. How are you? What's How going you on?
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, too.
I think it's interesting you had Mark on there today. I had something I've been meaning to ask you about, but it's about kind of like the popular appeal of libertarianism.
Uh-huh.
I know, like, growing up, I was always really into stand-up comedy, and that there's a populist element to people like Carlin and Hicks that people gravitate towards.
Yeah.
And I think that that we have comedians like Joe Rogan and Doug Stanhope and, like, public figures, Penn Jillette, that all identify as libertarian.
Yeah.
And that's easy for people to gravitate towards.
Yeah.
Without actually thinking or engaging in the news of politics. They kind of just latch on to certain things that these people say, the Adam Kokeshes of the world.
Right.
And,
Well, I will say this. I mean, I think George Carlin's politics, you could probably say, were more radical than they were liberal. I mean, they were certainly liberal in a sense and leftist, but I think he was a radical. I would say Bill Hicks, I don't know as well as to where you would place him, but he would definitely be leftist and anti-corporate. I don't know that he would be considered. I don't think that he probably espoused radical things. And on some level, you know, the libertarianism is also, in some respects, generically speaking, radical. It can be. But I think, you know, part of it is like there was, it doesn't surprise me that guys like Stanhope and who I think I went to high school with, actually. I'm not sure, but I'm pretty sure we went to high school together. And Rogan and, Gillette, for a comedian, you want to have a full license. And when you're making your money and, you know, the reality is you make your money as an actor. It's easy, I think, in some respects, to sort of like, you know, or I should say as a comedian, you know, you really write your own rules as a comedian. It's just like there is no, for the most part, there is no, you know, classic career trajectory.
Well, you guys are, comedians have a lot of autonomy.
Yes.
And I think that because comedians identify as libertarian because they have so much autonomy in their lives and are radicals in a sense that they're always speaking something within our culture.
Yeah.
That people, like, the idea that we could all live like comedians, I think you would agree, is kind of crazy.
Yeah, but
to
listen,
think of America if we're run by comedians.
Also understand this, too, is that I'm quite convinced that Penn Jillette, that Joe Rogan, that Doug Stanhope have never sat down to genuinely contemplate the implications of a libertarian ideology when it comes to things like Social Security or Medicare or the Civil Rights Act. You know, I think they have libertarian streaks, but frankly, I you know, and maybe this is unfair of me to say, but I don't think they've thought very deeply about it.
Could I just add to that? I think that's interesting you say that, because I think of Bill Maher as a guy who used to call himself a libertarian, but clearly has gotten more politically sophisticated, and basically he's a liberal. And then to the point where he's like, look, I want to legalize pot. That's how I'm a libertarian. But in terms of like actual policy,
right,
I'm a liberal because I know what I'm talking about now.
Right. Yes. And I will also say that it just makes it easier in some respects, I think, for them to do their comedy.
Yeah. I would agree that George Carlin is very radical. You have to think that he's in bed now for at least over 5 years. But people, I think, gravitate towards his cynicism, and that libertarians are very cynical people. Like, yeah. Their whole philosophy is extremely cynical. And that I kind of think that Carlin was a populist who wasn't politically active because he felt that he believed in John Dewey, and that he felt that America was dumb, uneducated, and that they would never be able to lift themselves up. And that John Dewey believed that if we had an educated populace, that that's how democracy works effectively. You have to have educated people that are informed to make informed decisions when it comes to voting. We don't have that.
Yeah, that's true. But we also really need a government to make sure that they do that one function. But I got to jump. But I appreciate you calling in, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you.
Right. Let's go back to the phones. Calling from a 503 area code. Who's this?
Oh, hi. This is Kay from Oregon.
Hi, Kay. How are you?
I'm terrific. How are you?
Good. What's going on?
I'm not a libertarian, nor have I ever been one.
All right.
Just making that clear.
I'm good. I'm glad to hear it. What else is up?
Yeah. I'm calling to give you a movie suggestion.
Okay.
It's not really a movie. It's a documentary series. It's a BBC documentary series called Wartime Farm, but it's on YouTube.
Wartime Farm?
Yes. I think you will love it. I'm telling everybody about it.
All right. I'll check
it
out.
Two archaeologists. Yeah, and the story, and they work a farm as if it were during World War II, and it's amazingly cool.
All right, I'll check it out. Thanks.
Okay.
Bye.
Enjoy. Sure. Bye.
Take one more phone call, then we'll go to the IMs, then we got to get going. I call from a 360 area code. Who's this?
Hey, Sam. This is Heather in Mount Vernon, Washington.
Hi, Heather. How are you?
Can we talk? I'm so good. I'm really excited about the new year, and can we talk about marijuana?
Sure.
That was some good reefer cake. I really enjoyed that.
Yeah, it was a good one this time.
And so I want to suggest that maybe you take a puff for your next interview with Mark Maron.
Maybe I take a what?
What do you think about that?
Maybe
take
smoke
a puff for your next interview with Mark Maron.
Oh, you want me to get high with Maron?
No, just before you interview him.
I want you to smoke a puff. And no, he needs to be sober and you need to be ripped, because there is some discrepancy here going on between you guys. And I got to tell you, that was a rough one for me to get through that. You know, that guy needs a lobotomy. You get high, he gets a lobotomy.
Oh, I thought you were.
What I want.
I thought you were talking about me. So you think he has a problem?
I do. It just bored the shit out of me, buddy. I don't know. You're just in a different ballpark than this person. And
if Mark listened to this show, he would be so upset.
He'd still be listening. So we should really be kind.
Well, you know what, Friday, I'm going to say what I think. So I'm really excited for Colorado. They seem to have their shit together pretty good, and they're looking forward to $400 million in tax for the state.
Yep.
Coming in from 36 retail outlets for their marijuana sales. So I think that they've got it together better than Washington, and I'm excited to see how it's going for them. There's a lot of less problem between, we in Washington, we have a real problem between the medicinal use, and now we have this recreational use with a different set of laws, and they're really confusing themselves with it. I think they're going to mess it up because they don't seem interested in undercutting the black market. I think that they're going to drive the price up. And so we're worried that it's just not going to work in Washington. I have some fear for that. But
yeah, I read a piece about Mark Schmidt, I think, who was a policy guy who works on this stuff. I think it was Mark Kleiman. And maybe we'll have him on to discuss it. The interesting thing is that there's a lot of implications to the way that you create a framework for something that particularly that is moving from, sort of the medical marijuana status, but also the sort of the black market status. And I hope it's not messed up. I mean, the good thing is that we've got, sort of two different experiments going on,
simultaneously in the same place. Right. So there's in Colorado, it's interesting that 36 retail shops for $400 million, that's going to average on $11 million per shop. So those retail licenses are worth an extraordinary amount of money.
Yep.
And it's my understanding that they're very difficult to get and that you have to be someone with a lot of money in the first place to get that. And so that concerns me a little bit, that it's going to totally take the corporate route and that they're just going to drive the price up and really make it meet that black market price. I'm interested to see how this is going to go. And thank you so much. I love you. I love you guys. And it's good to be a member. So
thanks, Colin. I appreciate it.
Become a member.
Thank you. All right. Talk to you soon.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right. Let's go through these IMs. Where that guy? Shane Thomas, it's been a stupid news week. The right has been shown, they seem to think, if we didn't already know it, they think free speech is only for them. I adore Cliff Schechter. It's better to have the Obamacare than the GOP version, namely, I don't care. I didn't like Three Kings. If I'm correct, Three Kings is a loose remake of Kelly's Heroes. Kelly's Heroes is much better. Kelly's Heroes, and I know this without even looking further, Clint Eastwood, Donald Sutherland, Don Rickles, a whole bevy. It was a...
Three Kings, the David O. Russell a rock movie, is a remake of that movie?
It is similar. It's not a remake, but it's similar. It's about, you know, guys going behind the lines to get some gold for themselves, essentially. But yeah, you're right, the broad outlines. Solaj Dim. Sam, I'm an aggregist. Let's debate. I don't think there should be any government at all. Oh, I just think I spoke to you. Yeah, that's too many. Quit debating this clown. Let me wait a second. Maybe this is a different guy. No, I just got done debating with Matt DiGeronimo. Okay. Yeah, you can't. That's too much of an IM, but I think we just spoke to you. Ilmek. Wow, this is also big. Mandy Groupon. Babs, what? I understand the New York cops are as powerful as the restaurant lobby, but de Blasio is pulling for Ray Kelly. This commish is equally disgusting as Obama wanting Bratton for head of Homeland Security. Can't tell you how disgusted I am with these smoke and mirror Dems. Michael, I know that gravity feeling. I was ostracized for thinking Avatar, Avengers, Skyfall were adequate movies at best. Sam, you were so right about Skyfall. This is old ones. I know the Fukushima disaster is depressing, but could you have Helen Caldicott on? Yeah, put that on the list. FYI, audio is horrible over stream. Sounds okay on YouTube, says Instant Jim. Militant apathy. Cliff is right. They do want to hurt people. It's pathological. I believe this BS conservative backlash against the critics, the Duck Dynasty's anti-gay, anti-black misogynist craziness is actually a good thing. The media didn't have the class to shut him down, so let him keep defending this crazy-ass dude. Only a matter of time before this family does or says something so effed up that the clown show can't continue a co-sign on it for anymore. Forget everything Marin said. You need to see Muscle Shoals, great documentary. By Minerally, please get Drift Glass for a talk about Brooks. P.S. Schmidt, hey, Sam, I sent you an email about Jacob Applebaum. Yes, I will check that out. He's on our list to have on the program. I'm happy now. Hi, Sam. Welcome back. I missed you. I sent you an email about a guy who wrote a piece for Salon and was a Ron Paul delegate turned liberal. I'll be interviewing him on local radio here in Reno. He'll be a great guest for you. The new word is handy capable. Eggnog Queen. Great show with Cliff today, but who is this other guest? Never heard of him. He is the Michelle Williams to your Beyonce. Maui Baker. We miss Marin on the field of battle for the soul of this country, but hey, as long as he's happy, whatevs. To be successful in a corrupt society, civic concern is a hindrance. C'est la vie. Never mind Marin's criticisms of your irascibility. Some would say the level one success is measured by the stature of their enemies. Lost any residual respect for Marin when he expressed liking for his sexist a-holes, Rogan and Carolla. Read the other person from Maui, Bronson. Easy to think communally out here on our little island needs to understand that this is not applicable anywhere. Plus, we do need some things from the feds, like NOAA, the Weather Service for tsunami and hurricane warnings. He's just upset as I am about the drone testing in Hawaii. Sahern and Liberal, always make time to master our Sam. I don't know what that means. Tom Frackman, Sam, I think you hit something with the merch. The Deuce kettleball instead of an ape face. What about an eagle kettleball clutching a Majority FM logo? I noticed Marin last month started out a week of podcasts with Will Ferrell, but ended with Yakov Smirnoff. He's big in Branson. Maybe there's something we don't know. What a country and a podcast. Guitars are. Majority Report apparel would sell, I think, tees and hoodies. Hey, I got it. Maybe even create a Majority wife beater for your libertarian pals. Francis Ha is streaming on Netflix, is C.H. Haber. Born Blue. See the World's End. Good excuse to watch Shaun of the Dead and Hot Fuzz, which are part of the trilogy. Shank Steel. The Hollywood phony is trying to butter you up to get the phony fingers all over your vinyl. What a coattail rider he was. Jeesh. And it's pronounced Husker Du. What did I say? Husker Du? Husker Du. Sam, Matt, Michael, Feliz Año Nuevo 2014. Best things about the snowstorm. Getting to listen live while shoveling snow. Mark's still funny, but I like the old one better. On an inconsequential note, Sam, your hair and makeup was flawless on Chris last night. Got some extra care? Long segment, too. Great start from Majority Report this year. No, 412. Freebie Fridays, freebie every day if you listen on the app. Politics. This is the first day I can stream the show live at work, but my last day of work. Bittersweet. Shofar for being unemployed. I'm sorry to hear that. The best shows inspired me to make the best of each month shows this year. Is that something you guys would like? Happy 2014. Yeah, it might be a good bonus for members, too. M. Schesser, while you were on break, the Young Turks were doing a membership drive, and Jenk was reading new member names during the show. I shit you not. One of the names he read was Matt DiGeronimo. If he's on again, you should ask him if he's a TYT fan. Jay Tingle, is the Marin thing over? I just stepped outside.
It might be him, actually, because one of our listeners was having a conversation with him about supporting the Wolfpack, and maybe that's how he did that.
Is the Marin thing over, says Jay Tingle. I stepped outside to press my tongue to a frigid steel lamppost as an alternative. Who is John Dewey? I refuse to stand by in silence as Skyfall is constantly sullied by your listeners. I'm not even going to read the rest of what you said. Cry Pop Phil. Given I have no money with my community and we progress and grow, how would I add services and teach to my realm? If there's no YouTube to get education from, nor schools or specialized educators, can I steal it from the community next to mine? Doniak, since you're talking comedians, you might try Fitzsimmons as a Friday guest. I've heard him mention you multiple times on his show. Yeah, I should have Fitzsimmons on. Put him on the list. Yeah, it's been a long time. Joe Rogan is progressive, says WizFan. I've been listening to his podcast the past month. It doesn't sound libertarian, but you played softball with him, so you would know better. No, I don't know. I don't know who told me that he was a libertarian. Sam, Bitcoin atom bomb. Bitcoin clearly points to the fact that technology will revolutionize our need for government. While we used to need government for labor laws and building roads, we've reached a point where there's no longer necessary. The internet has solved those problems. We can interface in totally new ways, and cars will soon be redundant. So can the country finally stop taxing me for public transit? Jude, streaming? You can always catch Doctor Who on Netflix, season 2. Forward, in my humble opinion, the Doctor is very progressive, and you would love the show. The Pale Bird. Check out the documentary streaming on Netflix called Chasing Ice. I saw it, and we interviewed the director on this program. Pale Bird, go back and check our archives at majority.fm. Sandman 104. My girlfriend got me a Majority Report subscription for Christmas, and it was the best gift I received. I wanted to add that I think the caller talked about how technology will save us is naively ignoring mankind's fallen nature. Technology cannot change our morality, but it can provide us with more leisure time with which to change ourselves. Fat J, I've been listening to you since 05. I don't know how much of your relationship with Marin is shtick, but I don't care. I laugh my ass off. Thank you. P.S. Francis Ha is great. Doe Link, enjoyed the best of 2013 shows. Notice critics of pot never talk about the hell alcohol is caused for millions and pot doesn't. Indeed. Also, Brooks and Obama speak from a whole different generation, not updated to science, medical pot. They're obviously uninformed. Looked into getting a Roku. TYT is. Oh, you know, we are on Roku. We just got to go live with that app. We're working on it. Hope Feld. Journalists are ignorant when they are constantly use the words young and healthy for Obamacare signups. Young and old doesn't count. A 25-year-old with cancer is way more expensive than a healthy 64-year-old. The only thing that counts for anti-selection for these immorally high-priced hospitals is whether the uninsured is healthy. Age doesn't count under age 65. If the Chinese icebreaker charged $100,000 per person rescued from Antarctica, it would be price gouging. So why isn't charging $53,000 for an appendectomy not price gouging? Price restrictions on healthcare now. Sandinista, when are you going to have Chris Hayes on? You know, I got to ask him. I just, you know, feel like I know how exhausting doing that show must be. But yeah, I'll talk to him next time I'm on. Cheney and Bushes, I turned the big 3-1 today. Shofar, please. Congratulations, and that's the final I Am of the day, folks, and the week. See you Monday.
It might take all the strength I got to get to where I want, but I know somehow I'm going to get there. I wasn't looking when I just got caught between the truth and the light bulb. Finding out won't make me feel any better. Yeah, I know the clock is ticking, but the meds are gonna kick in, and my pilot light shining bright. I get somewhere the choice is made, for the option where you don't get paid, for the road that finally breaks you. I guess somehow I lost my drive between the 101 and the 5. Do you know how far the detour takes you? Yeah, I know the clock is ticking, but the meds are gonna kick in, and my shifted in and out of